You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
Today is Wednesday, March 28, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, as the Supreme Court continues to hear the oral arguments surrounding the Affordable Care Act, interviews from my trip to Washington yesterday from across the steps of the Supreme Court. Today, Senator Tom Harkin from Iowa, Spike Ward, a woman from California who you may recall wrote an op-ed in the Los Angeles Times several months ago recounting how she had been a big critic of the Obama administration until she found she had cancer and needed to get health insurance. And finally, from the Healthcare for America Now, Ethan Rome, the executive director. We're going to be talking healthcare today, folks. And, of course, more stories in the better half of the program. So I was down in Washington. As you know, I was down there in January as well for the Families USA conference, basically talking to a lot of healthcare experts. And the central problem that I and many progressives have had with the Affordable Care Act was that it did not provide a public option, which, while it would not have been available to everybody, the public option, it would have been available to a fairly narrow subset of Americans, probably close to 1%, 2%. It would have provided a model for how effective single payer could be. Now, we already have that model. It's called Medicare. And we also have that model, I guess it's also called Medicaid. Medicare being a government-run insurance program for the elderly, people over the age of 65, and Medicaid being a government-run insurance program for people too poor to afford health insurance. And the problem I've always had with the Affordable Care Act is that it continues the existence of an industry that really adds no value to the public whatsoever, but continually drives the cost of health insurance through the roof. And not just health insurance, excuse me, health care through the roof. Now, with that said, over the past year, I have learned more and more about the Affordable Care Act, and there are certainly provisions in this that are exceptionally good. Not the least of which, it really codifies the notion that healthcare is a right. And I have to say, though, that these organizations that promote the Affordable Care Act, the Democratic Party and the Obama administration have done an atrocious job of selling this. Not even selling it, just telling people what's in it. And I think part of that is because of the political temerity of the Obama administration. As soon as healthcare passed, they ran from this thing. So just give you a sense of what is in effect with the Affordable Care Act now. Not just in 2014, but what's in effect now. We all know, I think most of you know, that if you are 26 years or younger, you can stay on your parents' health insurance program. Matt's shaking his head like his head's going to bobble off because he's turning 27 soon. Oh, turning 26, sorry. There are over 2 million Americans who have taken advantage of this over the past year. There are also, Matt raises his hand, which you may not know right now. And here again is the central dilemma about health insurance and about healthcare in this country. 80% of the costs of healthcare are borne by 20% of the people. And so for the rest of us, we're not aware of how good or how bad our health insurance is. And I would say how bad is actually to be more specific, because we're not in a position yet to need that care. Some of us may never need that extensive of care. We just don't know. Some of us will certainly need some, but we may never, knock on wood if we're fortunate, never need to deal with the implications of having cancer or having diabetes or having some other disease that is chronic or potentially fatal. We may never get hit by a bus and spend 7 months recuperating in a hospital. All of these incidences we may not be subject to, but we very well could, and we simply don't know who that's going to be. Now, because of the Affordable Care Act, there are no more lifetime caps on coverage. I want you to think about this right now. You have health insurance. If you do, you're lucky. Do you know when your insurance company will cut you off? If you get hit by a bus, if you need complete reconstructive surgery, if you get cancer, do you know how much your insurance company will cover? Is your lifetime cap at $100,000, $200,000, $500,000, $700,000? Did you even know you had one? My guess is you probably don't. I have no idea. I have no idea. But since these provisions have kicked in of the Affordable Care Act, there are no more lifetime caps on coverage. The law is also phasing out restriction on annual limits in coverage. Do you know how much money your insurance company will cover of your hospital bills if you're hit by a bus this year? Is it $50,000, $25,000, $100,000? That is being phased out by 2014. There will be no restrictions on a yearly limit in coverage. As of now, children under the age of 19 cannot be excluded from insurance because of pre-existing conditions. Think about that. There are hundreds of thousands of children now who have coverage, health insurance coverage, who couldn't get it before. Adults with pre-existing conditions when the law kicks in 2014, of course, we'll be able to buy insurance. Insurance companies will have to sell to them, unlike today. Pregnancy will no longer be a pre-existing condition. Any other disease you have will no longer be a pre-existing condition. They will not exist. They will not be relevant. As it stands today, there are high-risk pools that came in with the Affordable Care Act that will that states set up that will provide that insurance. When we listen to the Spike Ward interview, we'll see how important this is. The donut hole has closed for seniors, or at least it's shrinking, and it will be completely closed. So that 1,000 to 2,500 payment in prescription drugs will be closed because of the Affordable Care Act. And as it stands now, as of, I think it was October, preventative care, colonoscopies, prescription contraception, breast exams, mammographies, all of these things are now covered by your health insurance for free. Are you aware of that? Probably not. When you don't get a bill for your colonoscopy, it's because of the Affordable Care Act. I had no idea. For preventative care. And then there's other aspects of analyzing the quality of care and the quality of the effectiveness of different medical treatments because of other regulations that reduce disparities between different groups who are subject to different diseases. You know, high blood pressure may be more prominent than in certain races. These are now diminished because of increased data coverage and data collection. So all of these things are at stake right now. By all accounts, yesterday was a very rough day for the administration in the Supreme Court. Now, tomorrow, because all the people who are covering this actually in the courtroom are in the courtroom right now as we speak. Today, they're dealing with the severability of the mandate. And they're also dealing with the question of the expansion of Medicare. You realize that part of the Affordable Care Act is expanding Medicare to cover 13 million more people at 133% above poverty. It's also going to subsidize people who have family of four up to $90,000 a year. It's going to subsidize the cost of health care. You're going to hear all of those data points in these interviews. You're going to hear from Senator Tom Harkin on the issue of health care, and also I questioned him about that Washington Post article about Social Security. You're going to hear from Spike Ward. We're going to play these interviews. I'll come back to introduce them. And then in the better half of the program, I'm going to go through some of the issues that came out in the case today, or yesterday, the oral arguments. You can't divine anything for sure from oral arguments, but the experts, the court watchers, are quite convinced that the odds of the mandate being struck down have increased, or at least were bigger than they may have thought before. And it all deals with this notion of whether or not a person's choice to not buy insurance is something that can be covered by Congress's ability to regulate interstate commerce, and whether or not there's a limiting principle to the argument that the administration is offering in terms of whether or not when someone chooses not to buy health insurance today, are they actually affecting the health insurance market? So we will get to that in the better half of the program. This is weedy stuff, folks, but it's incredibly important, both on a policy level and, of course, on a political level. But for now, let's stick with the policy level and the legal implications of what is being discussed. Dahlia Lithwick summed it up in a in a piece. And we're hoping to talk to Dahlia Lithwick tomorrow. She is another one of those people who are sitting in the Supreme Court today listening to our oral arguments. But she's summing up the arguments that she heard, or at least were manifested in the questions that were asked by Alito, Scalia, Roberts, and Kennedy. Of course, Thomas never speaks. He is the silent one. And she says, but we seem to want to be free. Or she says, and this is in the context of the idea that somehow if you force people to buy health insurance, you're imposing on their liberty. And she sums it up. She says, this morning in America's highest court, freedom seems to be less about the absence of constraint than about the absence of shared responsibility, community, or real concern for those who don't want anything so much as healthy children or to be cared for when they are old. Until today, I couldn't really understand why this case was framed as a discussion of liberty. She says, this case isn't so much about freedom from government-mandated broccoli or gyms. Broccoli was used as an analogy. Can the government force us to buy broccoli if they force us to buy health insurance? This case isn't so much about freedom from government-mandated broccoli or gyms. It's about freedom from our obligations to one another. Freedom from the modern world in which we live. It's about the freedom to ignore the injured, walk away from those in peril, to never pick up the phone or eat food that's been inspected. It's about freedom to be left alone. And now we know the court is worried about freedom. The freedom to live like it's 1804. And for those of you who are members and listen to the better half of the program, that will not come as a surprise to you. We have people call in consistently who make that argument, that we should go back to that time before child labor laws, 40-hour work weeks, environmental laws, Social Security, Medicare. We should go back to a time before there were protections for consumers and workers in terms of their health and safety. We should revert back to a time of robber barons and might makes right. And just living off the largesse that was provided to us by free labor in the form of slavery, by free property and resources in the form of our having killed off or sequestered those people who owned it before us, or at least occupied that land and used those resources before us in the form of indigenous people. And so the broader implications of this case, as if you need broader implications than the idea of 40 million people getting health insurance, the idea of people being able to get health insurance even if they have pre-existing conditions, the idea of regulating health insurance so that it cannot fire us essentially as clients if we get sick or get too sick. If you needed even broader implications, it is that the five member majority of the Supreme Court want to return this country and strip even our most basic rights that we take for granted as Americans. Well, it's all in this. So let's start with Senator Tom Harkin from Iowa. As I spoke to him yesterday in the Methodist building, steps away from the steps of the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C. So continuing our coverage of the Affordable Care Act at the Supreme Court of the United States, with me now, as we are just steps away from the Supreme Court, Senator Tom Harkin of Iowa. Senator, thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here, Sam.
One of the things that I think is really clear from my perspective is that the American public doesn't really have a full picture as to what is actually in the Affordable Care Act. Do you think that Democrats, do you think that advocates, the administration, have done a good job in selling the Affordable Care Act?
No. But that's because a lot of it wasn't in existence. I think now is the time for us to really proactively go out there and tell people what's in it. For example, I see, you know, that if the Republicans have their way, Mitt Romney and others have their way, here's what Americans are going to lose. Right now, there are no caps on, no lifetime limits. Hundreds of thousands of Americans now have that benefit where there's no lifetime limit. They want to take that away from the American people. Right now, children up to age 19 can get insurance coverage even though they have a pre-existing condition. Republicans want to take that away. Right now, elderly can get colonoscopies, mammograms, prostate cancer screening with no co-pays and deductibles. Millions of Americans are taking advantage of that now. But that just came into existence last October. So more and more people are finding out about the benefits that's in there for them. And so that's what the Republicans want to do is take that away. I think if we frame it in that context, that what the American people have already in the way of benefits, they aren't going to want to lose those. They don't want to go back the way it was before.
Do you think in the event that the Supreme Court finds the mandate unconstitutional and either does or does not think it's severable from the rest of the bill, but do you think an increased threat to the viability of the Affordable Care Act is a political liability to the president come November, to other Democrats come November, or do you think it's a political advantage? I mean, this is a fairly sort of, I understand, a political crass calculation, but I'm curious on your take of it.
Well, first, if the Supreme Court finds that the individual mandate is unconstitutional, they will be overturning over 70 years of precedence. It's been clear for a long time that Congress, under the Commerce Clause, has the power to do this. So they would be overturning, like I say, 70 years of precedence. And then I think it would be seen as purely a political maneuver. Keep in mind that Justice Roberts, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, was the lead on the Bush v. Gore case in getting the Supreme Court to take that out of Florida and take it to the Supreme Court, again, which there was no precedence for that either. And, of course, that handed the election to George Bush, and George Bush reciprocated by putting him on the Supreme Court. So, again, I'm concerned about that. I'm concerned that Chief Justice Roberts will follow his political instincts rather than looking at the law and precedents.
I think that's a very legitimate concern after what we saw 10 years ago.
Exactly.
So assuming they do pursue their political instincts, from a political standpoint, if you had to run on it, if you were President Obama, you had to run on it, if you have to run on it as a Democrat, isn't it actually advantageous from a political standpoint, though it causes, aside from the implications of people losing certain coverage, is it a political advantageous move, or do you subscribe to the notion that if it's struck down, somehow that's going to hurt President Obama?
Either way, whether it's upheld or struck down, I believe it's advantageous to President Obama to go out there and forthrightly campaign on the Affordable Care Act, on health reform, because of the things I just mentioned, all the things that are benefiting people. And in 2014, everyone will be covered regardless of pre-existing conditions. That is a big benefit to people. All of the things we have in there, prevention and wellness programs that are in the bill, that will be lost if the Republicans repeal this bill. And we'll be set back to where the insurance company stands between you and your health care provider. And I thought that's what we were trying to get rid of. Well, we did get rid of this in the Affordable Care Act. So I've said before, if Republicans and Romney, Mitt Romney, if they want to keep campaigning that they're going to repeal the health care bill, I think we ought to take up funds and buy their ads for them. Because I believe that people don't want to repeal it more and more. There'll always be that hardcore, of course, that just want Obama to be a one-term president, and they'll do whatever they can to defeat him. But I think the big bulk of American people understand that they now have some really good things in health care, and they don't want to lose them. So I believe we had a campaign forthrightly on what we did in the health care reform bill.
Do you think the administration was too timid in pursuing an offensive strategy about health care once it was passed? I mean, because there was a real sense that they said, okay, we don't want to talk about this anymore. This was sort of a big battle. We don't want to talk about it anymore. Yeah. Was that a mistake?
Well, we probably should have been more forthright. But, again, keep in mind, a lot of the things in the health care bill didn't go into existence until just a little while ago. Many of the things I talked about didn't start until last October.
That would be a great argument to have, though. Wouldn't it have been in 2010 where you say the caps are going to be gone,
Your
kids are going to be able to go in there, and they go, oh, no, that's not true. That doesn't happen for 18 months.
Yes. See, I think we ceded the high ground to the Tea Party in 2010. When they came out of the woodwork and started campaigning against it, I remember meetings I had in Iowa at that time, and they were a vocal minority. But once people understood what was in the bill, the majority of every audience I spoke to in Iowa were in favor of it, even though you always had that minority of the Tea Party. So I often thought from those experiences that we should have been more positive, more forthright on the health care bill itself. And I think for some reason we just weren't.
Do you think the administration has been strong enough in protecting things like Social Security and Medicare? I mean, we read that piece in the Washington Post which suggests that President Obama was a hair's breadth away from making the grand bargain. And in fact, he had basically said to Speaker Boehner, I will take that deal. Give me your sense of that.
Well, I hope that President Obama is maturing in office and that he sees that there are some things that that we as progressives and as Democrats are not going to back away from. We're not going to privatize Medicare. We're not going to partially privatize Social Security. These are things that
we're... Are Democrats going to cut it? I mean, when you raise the retirement age, it's a cut.
Well, we did that back in 81, and we shouldn't be doing it any longer. In fact, I'm going to be introducing a bill this week that I've worked on for over a year, a bill called, Saving the Middle Class. One of the provisions in that is not to cut Social Security, but to actually increase Social Security benefits, raise the cap, and then raise Social Security benefits for those in the lower end of the economic spectrum. We can have it secure until way beyond 2050. So I'm taking the opposite tack. Let's increase Social Security benefits.
Well, Senator Tom Harkin, I appreciate your time with us, and I hope that the bill that you're introducing will actually pass.
Well, stay tuned. There's a lot to it, and basically the middle class has been eroded for the last 30 years. It's time to stop it and turn it around.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam.
We are back. All right. Okay, next up, we're going to hear from Spike Ward. You may remember on this program, we had actually read the op-ed from Spike Ward that she wrote in the Los Angeles Times. And here is that interview with her that I did yesterday. Okay, we are back in our continuing coverage of the Affordable Care Act at the Supreme Court of the United States. Oral arguments this week in Washington, D.C. And with me now is Spike Ward. She is the creator of the cartoon strip Art. She's a painter, an education activist, and a writer. Many of you, some of you, may know Spike from an op-ed that she wrote for the Los Angeles Times. Spike, tell us what was in that op-ed. This was a couple months ago.
Yeah, this was the first week of December. I had been diagnosed with breast cancer, stage 3 breast cancer, a month before that. And we'd been without health insurance for 2 years. So I was in a really dark place, didn't want to leave my house because everybody's telling me cancer stories. And I was just too terrified to go out into the world, and so I stayed home, which I don't like doing. And I said to my husband, the only thing I think I can do to help get me out of this place is if I help, you know, I can help somebody else by telling them about the pre-existing condition insurance plan, PCIP, that I got as a result of the Affordable Care Act, with going from being uninsured to being insured within 10 days. So I asked him if it would be all right if I did that, because I'd have to out us as being uninsured. Everybody would know then that we were this family without insurance, and that would cause us some problems. But he thought it was a really good idea, because he just felt like, you know, America needs to see that the new face of the uninsured looks like us. We're just middle America.
Well, I mean, let's talk about that. When you say you were sort of embarrassed to out yourself as being uninsured, what give us a sense of your middle class. What would have been embarrassing at that point?
Well, right before the recession hit, my husband has his own small business. He has a computer business, and I'm the founder and a director of a nonprofit that gets arts back into schools. And we were both doing really, really well until the recession hit. And then he kept working, but people weren't paying him. And then people quit giving to charity, which meant I had to keep working, and money wasn't coming in. So before that, he'd had a really great job working for an entertainment company. He had the really great health plan. And then when he got laid off, that bumped us off into the individual health insurance market. And that's the most expensive insurance you can buy, and it's not the best coverage. So we'd been paying $1,500 a month to keep our insurance. It kept getting higher and higher until it got to be $1,500, which was the same as our mortgage. We were having to use our home equity line of credit to pay for the health insurance. And then the bank cut us off from our own home equity line. So we didn't have a choice. We couldn't pay the health insurance. Well, we knew other people in our same situation, but it's not one of those things you talk about at parties. Hey, you know, how poor are you? But we knew it was a growing problem. And since I'm a prominent health, you know, a leader, a nonprofit leader in LA and a public school advocate, people know who I am. I thought, you know, I think people should know that people assume that uninsured people are irresponsible deadbeats, and they're not. We're good people, and we work really, really hard, and now we're in a really bad situation. And it would help me if I could help other people, and they could learn about PCIP, and it would just help us to also help kind of bring light to this problem, so that other people can all start really being honest about this.
Did you know? Well, tell us what PCIP is.
It's pre-existing condition insurance plan. It's a result of the Affordable Care Act. If you have been without health insurance, or you've been kicked off of health insurance from your health insurance company, and you've been without insurance for 6 months, you have a pre-existing condition, you're a U.S. citizen, and your doctor will give you a letter saying you have this condition. It's a three-page application. Every state has its own exchange. It's a real insurance plan. So you pay premiums. There's a deductible. There's copays and everything. But you get the care you need.
And this is basically a stepping stone to essentially the regulations about people not being able to be denied health care because of pre-existing conditions.
Right.
Okay. Now, the very fascinating part about this. Well, it's all fascinating, but there's two elements that strike me. One is this something that you were aware of before
No.
you became okay?
No.
And this is one of the challenges in selling the Affordable Care Act.
Yes.
Is that people don't really know about their insurance, whether it's good or bad, if they have it. And they don't really know what's available to them, the Affordable Care Act, until they get sick. And not everybody gets sick at the same time.
Right.
And so this is one of those challenges, and I suppose that's one of the reasons why I wrote it. The other thing that struck me is that you, I think, typical to many of people in our audience, have been less than thrilled with President Obama from a progressive standpoint.
Yeah.
And this changed your perspective.
Yes.
Just tell me briefly about that.
Well,
I know that's a weird thing, obviously, you know, because I got something. But, I mean, this is an important thing.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to talk about it. That's why I'm here, because I feel like I need to pay it forward. It's my civic duty, and my life is literally being saved by this, and I want to cop to the fact that I checked out. I'm a, you know, a politically astute person that just quit listening. I couldn't take it anymore. You know, we talk about politics at the dinner table every night, and when this whole Affordable Care Act was, there was just a little piece here and a little piece there, and we're going, what? We wanted single payer. And so I wasn't real happy about not getting that. And then we find out, oh, we're going to have to pay for health insurance in 2014. Well, if I had done my research, if I had bothered to educate myself about this, I would have known that the way it's all worked out, if it goes the way it's supposed to go, is that we could all afford health insurance in 2014. But I heard $1,500 a month again. Forget it. We don't have it. Put me in jail. We don't have it. So then I just turned off.
Now, I got to say, now you probably know that, A, you can't be put in jail for
right.
it. B, that you would, if you couldn't pay, you would be subsidized.
Yes.
If it's not either through Medicare or through the subsidies
yes.
that come
now,
from the Affordable Care.
Yes, now if I bothered to go do my research, you know, do what I normally do, and that is go find out. But I was, like I said, we were so stressed out from dealing with the recession. I couldn't take it anymore. So that was an irresponsible thing to do. So what I want people to hear is that it is very confusing. I have now read many books on the Affordable Care Act and the history of national health care and what has been tried in this country and what's failed. And I have a pretty good understanding. I can keep up with this conversation. But there's a lot of stuff out there. It's just all over the place, misinformation, and people are fearful. They're afraid of losing what they've got. They're afraid of what this is. But chill out, America. Do your research. Talk intelligently about this stuff and realize that there, you know, this is a great start, and that this man could not have gotten single payer if he had magic powers. Now I understand that, given everything that was against him, it had to go the way that it went.
Well, I mean, aside from that, I think the most important thing is that people should appreciate exactly what's in this bill. Yeah. And again, if people want to get into the high-risk pool, what is it?
It's called the Pre-Existing Condition Insurance Plan, PCIP.gov. And then you go onto that website and choose your state, and then that'll tell you where to go.
All right. Well, Spike Ward, thanks for sharing your story
with
us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And I want to encourage people, Google Spike Ward, Los Angeles Times. You can read this op-ed for yourself, get more information. And again, thank you for joining
thank
us.
Thank you.
All right, folks. That is our free lesser half of the show for today. In the better half, we will run this interview with Ethan Rome, executive director of HCAN, gives a lot of statistics that are fascinating about the Affordable Care Act. Also, in the better half of the program, we'll talk about what took place, the legal arguments that came out of yesterday's oral arguments, the Affordable Care Act. And I guess, if not over the next couple of days, certainly over the next couple of months, we're going to be talking about the prospect of what is the left left with if there is no Affordable Care Act. Single payer, here we come, maybe in 20 or 30 years as things get really bad. But we'll see. Folks. Yesterday, as I was sitting in a room full of top radio hosts, admiring all of their shiny equipment, knowing that they were all paid. Well, not all, actually. A couple of the guys are independent. Some are paid by corporate behemoths that survive on the largesse of corporate advertising. This program, no. We're running this thing with Audible, where you get that free Audible download. You can find details on the site. But really, the only thing that supports this program are you, the members, and you, the potential members. And even if you don't want the material in the better half of the program, you will make the program possible, even the first 40 minutes. So become a member today. Very small investment in independent media. And in perhaps your own enjoyment as well. All right, folks, you can call us at 646-257-3920 in the better half. You can IM me at Majority FM. We'll also play this interview from Ethan Rome. Talk more about what took place yesterday. If you want to support this program in other ways, use our Amazon link to buy your Amazon junk, justcoffee.coop. Use the coupon code MAJORITY for 10% off. Give us a review on iTunes. Donateyouraccount.com. Buy merch. See you in a few.